From the headquarters of the United Nations Development Programme, this is Learning for Nature, the podcast about nature, people, and sustainability. I'm your host, Julie Capavari.
And I'm your host, Marjorie Tolsdorf. In this episode, we are joined by Ravi Correa, founder and president of the Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society, based in Sri Lanka and the United States. Ravi founded this society in 1995. With the aim of charting a new course for sustainable conservation efforts across Sri Lanka, furthering economic development goals in sustainable ways to simultaneously promote ecosystem protection and conservation. One of many of his organization's most notable achievements was the development of a strategic approach to mitigate human-elephant conflicts.
One of Ravi's main life goals is to uplift rural people in Sri Lanka economically, while also enabling long-term sustainable conservation of the endangered Asian elephant population. His work has garnered international recognition. SWCS won the UNDP Equator Prize in 2008, the Charity of the Year Award from the American Chamber of Commerce in Sri Lanka in 2011, and the Most Innovative Development Project Award from the Global Development Network in 2015. And this is just to name a few. Welcome to the Learning for Nature podcast, Ravi.
Thank you for having me, Julie and Marjorie. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I wanted to say congratulations on the Equator Prize, even though that was back in 2008. But I know your organization has had a very long-standing history. And I know in 2020, you celebrated your 25th anniversary, and all the way since 1995, the Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society has been mediating the ongoing conflicts between humans and elephants to achieve a harmonious coexistence between the two. What exactly are the main causes of human-elephant conflict?
The main causes are actually rural population growth and agriculture development. Because for whatever the reason, for decades, successive Sri Lankan governments have followed an agenda of developing or attempting to develop agriculture as the economic base for the rural population. Unfortunately, this has not really resulted in the economic outcomes or benefits as envisaged by such an agenda. What it has done is, over the course of, I would say, nearly seven decades, destroyed our forest cover, because you have to open up land to distribute to people, and this has come at the cost of encroaching more and more into the country's available forest cover. And of course, this has resulted in decreasing habitat for many species of wildlife, not just elephants. But the issue with elephants is that the elephant, being a large mammal and a herbivore that feeds on plants and grass, as well as being a highly mobile animal that needs a fairly large extent of area, has been the most impacted. And also, given their ecological requirements, this decreasing habitat has made them to search for their food and water. And this leads to the conflict, because as elephants find themselves contained into smaller and smaller habitats that cannot sustain them, they have to, go outside. I mean, outside means they still try to range within their home range that they are used to. But now most of it is, settled by people and converted into agriculture. So in many cases, it's not the elephants actually encroaching into human habitations. That's not true. What's happening is the elephants are still considering these settled areas as their natural range. And unfortunately now people are settled there and they are cultivating crops, which obviously the elephants find very attractive. And then obviously you have now set the stage for conflict, right? And then the climate itself, like lack of rain, especially today, we see very aberrant weather patterns due to climate change. The climate used to have a set pattern, which farmers are attuned to. Cultivation seasons were in confluent with the weather. But now the weather is so aberrant, sometimes the farmers don't know when to plant. Or they might start planting and then the rains will stop. all of this combined is proving or has proved that trying to drive an agriculture-based development agenda for these people is not the way to go. Successive governments have invested billions in trying to provide for these people, and the returns have been very minimal. And today, the agriculture contribution to the national GDP is less than 8%. So that alone shows that this is not a successful effort.
I see. So it seems like one of the main solutions is to present another sustainable alternative livelihood to agricultural development. But there are still going to be people in Sri Lanka who want to do subsistence agriculture and develop, cultivate crops, and because that's probably what they know. So agricultural development is a really vulnerable livelihood, and it creates complicated situations with the local ecosystem. But at least in the case with elephants, it sounds like it's more of a land dispute. So what are the solutions behind that? Without the conservation of the Asian elephant's habitat and the case for other less charismatic animals' habitat, without that, we have an imbalance in the local ecosystem. And without the preservation of farmer livelihoods and the development of agriculture, we don't have economic stability or food.
We need to look at creating jobs for most of these people that are not agriculture-based. You know, we need to look at other industries, manufacturing, service. We need to create more robust economic, you know, development, economic incentives for these people, not based on agriculture. How are we trying to address the issues for farmers with elephants? Since we cannot, you know, bring industries to these areas, we have to work with what we have. So what we are doing is we are encouraging these farmers to adapt practices that would make their livelihood less attractive for elephants, in the sense like the crops they grow, right? So many of these farmers are growing rice, bananas, corn, watermelon, pumpkin, and all of these things are very, very attractive to elephants for the same reason that we find them attractive. They taste good.
There we go. Even further, I want to ask you about this other point. Humans don't want to harm elephants because, at least in Sinhalese culture, is it true that elephants are viewed as sacred? What solutions has the Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society implemented to reconcile the values of humans and the needs of animals and wildlife in the region?
This is another fallacy that the Sinhalese culture is very, what can you say, accepting of wildlife, and have this attitude towards elephants' lives or any other wild animal's life is, you know, precious. And this comes from the fact that the country is a Buddhist country. But that's not quite true, to be very honest. Yes, there are certain people who have empathy for animals, and maybe that originates from the fact that they actually practice in Buddhist, or the fact that they love animals like anybody else, right? People actually do purposely go and harm elephants. I mean, that is because they see the elephant as a threat to their lives and their livelihoods and their homes and their property. In 2019, we lost close to 410 elephants. A substantial number of them, I would say at least 90% of those elephants, died as a result of retaliatory measures taken by farmers and villagers.
Ravi's other groundbreaking creations include the Field Scouts Program, the first ever community-based ecological research project focused on elephants in Sri Lanka, and Project Orange Elephant, a program that encourages farmers to cultivate oranges as a trophic deterrent, since elephants apparently do not eat citrus. Oranges also provide farmers with a sustainable supplementary income. Project Orange Elephant is bridging the gap between agricultural lands and elephant feeding grounds to create a peaceful farmer-elephant coexistence.
One of the important findings from our work over the years was the fact that we found elephants do not like citrus. And citrus is a good crop in the sense it has a good demand, like lime, lemons, oranges, mandarins, tangerines. all these things have good market demand. But in Sri Lanka, citrus cultivation has never been a commercial level crop. We made use of this information, conducted feed-in trials to make sure that elephants do not preferentially eat citrus. And we selected oranges because the oranges have the most demand from all the citrus varieties. And this specific variety we selected, it's a locally developed cultivar of orange called Bibile Sweet. It's good variety to grow because it's suitable for the climate. And also it's a grafted plant that we provide the farmer. It starts to mature in about 1.5 years. And by 3 years, it's fully grown. They saw the change in elephant behavior actually as soon as they planted the orange plant. And even if elephants come, they don't linger or loiter in their properties, but just walk through. So the orange trees are not really stopping elephants from coming, but what they're doing is they are acting as a deterrent in that farmer's garden. And they just keep moving, mainly because obviously citrus has a very overpowering aroma and elephants who are highly sensory to sense of smell.
So elephants not just won't eat the citrus, they're also actively trying to avoid the citrus because they really don't like the oranges.
Now we've been monitoring the farmers that we have been providing these trees on the growth of the trees, you know, the farmer's attitude and behavior, their maintenance of the trees, and then any other issues like pests, diseases, all that. And then of course, the most important two element factors that we would like to know is how it's affecting the elephants, you know, the huge conflict. And then the other is how it is affecting their livelihood, you know, in the sense of is the oranges providing them with the income, you know, and how much of it is. These are amazing to us too, you know, because some of the information we are getting were not even in our minds at the time we started the project. The project has far more potential for the farmers, as well as for the environment, increasing the forest cover. So it's like a climate change adaptation. We have distributed close to 20,000 orange plants. So that's a huge increase in the tree cover in the area. And we are planning to distribute 15,000 more trees this coming year.
Great, that's amazing.
The Saving Elephants by Helping People project implemented a novel concept to fence elephants out rather than in protected areas to give elephants room to range freely without causing damage to crops, property, and human lives. The Saving Elephants by Helping People project has grown to include applied conservation techniques, such as erecting solar-powered electric fences along village and field boundaries, to physically prevent elephants from intruding into human habitations, to prevent conflicts, community development and engagement through endeavors, such as a village scouts program, which engages the local population in tracking and monitoring elephant movements, and the implementation of sustainable economic development practices.
Do you find that the citrus trees, the orange trees, are more effective than physical fences between land and habitat?
Well, it's not one or the other, because you have to be very careful here. You know, our approach to addressing conflict is very conflict specific. Now, the solar powered electric fences do not work everywhere. As much as I don't think you can, you know, cultivate oranges to address all conflict issues either. You know, you have to pay attention and you have to gather your data and look at the landscape and look at all the variables as to how this conflict is playing out in that specific location. Just because it will work in one place does not necessarily mean it will work elsewhere. So it's the same approach here. The electric fences, they encircle entire villages and their fields. Project Orange Elephant, it's mainly to prevent elephants from coming into home gardens. It's not a project where you have extensive fields of rice, and also it makes it a little bit difficult to plant, you know, orange trees along vast fields. If you do that, even then I seriously doubt that it'll stop elephants from going into a rice field. Then you have to also look at how these trees are going to be looked after and maintained, because they need a certain amount of maintenance. But again, electric fences won't work everywhere. To give you a good example, is our elephant-friendly bus. Now there's an elephant corridor through which people also go to their villages. The elephants use this corridor to travel from the national park to a forest reserve located outside the park. Now, a certain section of this corridor is also traversed by people. There's a road cutting through this corridor for about a kilometer. It provides access to two villages in the forest reserve. Sometimes 7,500 elephants are going through this place. Sometimes, you know, one or two. But then you have people also walking through this. And what we realized, we have been monitoring this corridor since 2002. And then by 2013, we saw conflict increasing in the corridor. Earlier, there was not much conflict. You know, people and elephants used to somehow or other move through this corridor without incident. But eventually by 2013, I think more people have moved into these villages through marriage, through immigration, and through birth, just the population increasing. More children are now walking to school. And now we started to see conflict. Various elephants are moving from other areas where they have been displaced. And some of these elephants have very bad experiences with people. And they see people and their attitude towards people is very hostile and aggressive. And then people started shooting elephants. So it became completely chaotic. And then we realized we had to do something. But now in a situation like that, you can't put a fence. Where are you going to fence? So we realized we need to provide these people with a safe conveyance. So we bought a bus. We provided them with a bus service called the Elephant-Friendly Bus. That was mainly for the school children. So the bus would pick up school children in the morning, take them to school, and then in the afternoon, take them back to home. But anyone else can travel in it too. And it's a free ride. And so that immediately, I'm telling you, immediately the conflict ceased. So now we can take the Elephant-Friendly Bus elsewhere and make sure we provide a service, similar service to another area with similar, you know, issues.
Okay, that sounds great. That's a really great local solution to a local problem. It makes sense that there is no one catch-all solution.
So we learned that the SLWCS accepts volunteers from all over the world to participate in terrestrial and marine wildlife research. Considering the importance of working with local communities and finding sustainable solutions for them that also work to mitigate human-elephant conflict, why do you believe volunteerism and responsible ecotourism are important aspects of community-based initiatives? And how do external perspectives and voices really add to conservation efforts in Sri Lanka?
So the volunteerism program, one of the primary objectives is putting value onto something that people are destroying, people are taking for granted, and they only see its immediate benefit to them. So for instance, cutting a tree for the timber, poaching, going and killing something just for its consumption value. And none of these things are sustainable in the sense, yeah, it would be sustainable if we were still living, you know, 100 years ago, but it's all the opposite now. That is one of the primary objectives of the volunteerism program, to put value and make people understand that you don't necessarily have to kill something or cut down something to get the benefit. Actually, by allowing it to be there, you can get a different kind of benefit, which is actually more long-term, and it's a reoccurring benefit to the community and to everybody. So that was one of the primary focuses of the volunteerism program. And of course, there are other outcomes of it as well. Okay, so one is the volunteers coming in brings a new economic infusion into the area. Their arrival adds to the economy. This, of course, is actually not just the local area where they come to volunteer. If you look at it, it impacts on the national economy, actually. In fact, even the global economy, because these people fly. I mean, they plan to come from America or England, Canada, Australia, wherever. So from the moment they decide, I'm going to volunteer somewhere, they are contributing to the economy. The impacts are huge. And then, of course, they come to our project site, and then whatever the time period they spend there is hugely impactful. And then the other thing is the attitude and behavioral change these people also contribute to. Many of our villagers, in fact, they have come and asked me, I mean, because some of these people are very young people, you know, they're gap year students who have just finished high school. Most rural villages, it's unthinkable to think that their child would go, you know, thousands of miles away to a different country, not know the language, not know the culture, you know, not know anybody, right? In Sri Lanka, normally you visit family, friends, and relatives. You just don't go somewhere and, you know, live with people you hardly know. For some, whatever the reason, they find it very, very amazing that these people come. And then, of course, then they realize these people are coming, oh, to see the elephants, you know, see the birds or whatever, see the wildlife, just to be with nature. And then all of a sudden, there is this change in them too, like, oh, okay. So they also tend to slightly get that perspective into their own mindset, like, oh, what we have taken for granted has value. We should, you know, be a little bit more protective of these things rather than destroy them, because people come from all the way, thousands of miles away, just to enjoy this. The volunteers themselves get an incredible experience. You actually see all the dynamics of how wildlife affect people, how people affect wildlife, and how in many societies and cultures where that live in areas rich in wildlife, they do not necessarily have the same perspectives as people living in a city about wildlife. And this comes back to what Julie said earlier. No one would want to hurt elephants, right? It's unthinkable to think anyone in New York or England or Sydney or, you know, Auckland, New Zealand, or in Zurich, Switzerland, is thinking of harming elephants purposely.
Like to think.
Right? In Sri Lanka, there are people who, you know, get up in the morning and think, oh, I want to harm the elephant that came and destroyed my crop or destroyed my house or injured my child or, you know, tried to kill me. Wherever there are elephants and people and there is conflict, there are people who want to hurt, harm, kill elephants. So that's the reality. And that's a reality that we have to deal with too as a conservation organization. But in our situation, we have to look at both sides of it. We can't go to these communities and say, oh, elephants are important, you have to conserve elephants, and your life is not worth two pence. We can't say that. For whatever the reasons, irrespective of bad development decisions made by earlier governments to settle these people and, you know, provide them with a livelihood in agriculture, the fact is they are there now. These are the elements we have to work with. We have to find solutions. So many times there is no one solution, as I said. Every situation you need to study, you have to learn the dynamics of this, the pros and the cons, and most importantly, what is driving the conflict at that location for that situation. And if possible, it's great if you can step back and try to rectify things at the level of where conflict is being created rather than trying to address the conflict.
We learned so much from you today. Thank you so much, Ravi, for all of your insights. We learned everything from finding sustainable solutions to promote peace and coexistence between people and wildlife, such as planting orange trees, to the importance of sharing these core values with the rest of the world in a really genuine way. So thank you for your time today and for teaching us so much.
Oh, you're most welcome. And thank you for having me. I truly appreciate the opportunity to voice some of these thoughts, you know, and especially during the corona period, it's not, you get many opportunities to have this kind of dialogue. Some of the initiatives we have started, we have interests, have had discussions with two countries in Africa, Botswana and Tanzania, that is interested to see whether they can replicate the Project Orange Elephant. We are happy to see other people willing to try this out. But then it's just a first step. Now, you know, there are so many other challenges you have to overcome to see whether this will work in any of these two African nations, mainly because we are dealing with a different species of elephant, different cultures, different land, landscape, everything is different. It's a case of, you know, going step by step to assess whether Project Orange Elephant will work or the concept will work, that we'll find something in these nations that can be used instead of oranges. So either we replicate the project itself or we try to adapt the concept to fit into a local situation.